This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday for Wednesday, December the 15th. This is CKLN 88.1 FM broadcasting in Toronto. CKLN.fm on your computer, Rogers Digital 947. This is our Word of Mouth show. It is being pre-recorded on our Wednesday because this is a major meeting going on for CKLN membership on the bylaws. So if you're a CKLN member and if you're around the downtown, the 55 Gold Street location of CKLN, the Ryerson Student Campus Center, make your way on down for this meeting, which is going to be taking place. Otherwise, keep on listening to the Word of Mouth Wednesday, because tonight we've got a big show lined up for you tonight here on Ryerson's official campus community radio station, CKLN. First up, we're going to have an interview presented by Rob Nieto, who is the co-host on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. And Rob Nieto has got an interview lined up with a guest that he is going to be talking about, Melissa Filion, about what's going on with Greenpeace, and a bit of information on what the Greenpeace is about. Well, Melissa Filion is a Greenpeace forest campaigner who has released the 2010 Boreal Marketplace Review. This week it was released. It's a Greenpeace put out a review identifying the big name stories and how they treat Canada's last remaining intact forests. So that's going to be coming up first, but then also later on in the show, we're going to have an interview with Amy Miller. And Amy Miller we tried to have on a few weeks ago, and it didn't quite work out. And Amy Miller is an independent journalist who works with the Dominion Media Co-ops, and she is going to be talking about her experiences at the G20. And the G20 is, of course, one of our top stories of the year, 2010. It's been a major focus of the Word of Mouth Wednesday has been the martial law that you heard about last week on the show, the Ontario Ombudsman. And actually, we got some of those clips posted online. In case you're looking to get some video of the Ontario Ombudsman, you can check out youtube.com/supportlocalscene. You'll find the Ontario martial law videos. And also on the Toronto Media Co-op, you can search, you'll find the Caught in the Act. You'll find some videos and then the responses to Caught in the Act, and you know, some of the audio we played last week. But in case you're looking for a visual, check out toronto.mediacoop.ca. And then also later on in the show, we're going to be talking about the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal support campaign and the campaign for Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so what we're going to be playing is one of Mumia Abu-Jamal's commentaries from PrinceRadio.org, and then also we're going to be playing some audio from Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal rally that took place in early November 2010 near the U.S. consulate. And it was an evening of, you know, speeches and rallying around the pending execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal, a famous political prisoner, who you can hear a lot of information on this radio station that you can't hear on anywhere else. So stay tuned to CKLN for your Mumia Abu-Jamal updates. Check out Saturday Morning Live for all your info on Mumia Abu-Jamal. And we're going to be right back on Word of Mouth Wednesday with Rob Nieto's segment. So this is the Word of Mouth. Stay tuned. Word up.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
We will be watching like hawks.
And without any further ado, here is Rob Nieto's segment on the climate campaigns and Greenpeace and interview with Melissa Filion.
thanks for joining us in our program. And I just wanted to talk right away about the review that you're doing. You have some pretty big names that you mentioned in the review. You have stores like Office Depot, Rona, Toys R Us. Tell us about the background of this review, how it came about, and why you're targeting these big name companies.
Sure. So let's recall, about 3-4 years ago, Greenpeace made a call to action to a lot of large corporate customers, so customers that buy a lot of forest products, whether it's wood, paper, and ask them to look at their supply chain and, you know, make some criteria, develop some policies, make a change. Those large corporate customers can have an influence on how the boreal forest is being managed. And today, in 2010, we're launching a review that talks about, you know, those companies and have they made any progress.
You put the companies into different categories. You put them into leaders, true leaders, and failing our forest. Tell us about the companies that are true leaders and why they're true leaders. And in particular, talk to us about this case study of Kimberly-Clark, because Greenpeace did have a campaign against Kimberly-Clark for a while. It was called Clear Cut, became quite popular. So just tell us a little bit about the true leaders category.
Sure. So those companies that you mentioned, you know, Axel Springer, Cascades, Indigo, Kimberly-Clark, Office Depot, and Rona, are in the category that we call the true leaders. And those companies are the ones that have shown the most progress and have you know, have performed the most on, you know, in our criteria. Some of those criteria have to do with the actions or the measures that they're taking to protect endangered forests, actions to and contents in their purchase for recycled fiber, the preference as well that they're giving to wood that is or paper that is FSC certified. So these are some examples of the criteria that we've used. And the companies that are true leaders have performed very well in most of those criteria. You talked about the example of Kimberly-Clark. A few years ago, we were Greenpeace was campaigning against Kimberly-Clark, asking the company to increase the level of FSC certified pulp in its purchase, increase the level of recycled fiber in its purchase as well, and in its products. And what we're seeing today is that Kimberly-Clark has made a big shift, has responded to the crisis in the boreal forest, and is now taking actions, strong actions, have developed a strong purchasing policy, and, you know, has now put in place a lot of measures to help protect the boreal forest.
Now tell us about the other side, the companies that are in the failing our forest category.
So the companies that are in this category are Best Buy, Harlequin, Home Depot, Sears, and Toys R Us. And these are the companies that are really, as you're saying, failing our forest. The reason for this is that, you know, we've asked them to act. We've asked them to look at their supply chain, to, you know, make calls to their suppliers, to investigate where their fiber and wood was coming from, making sure that it wasn't coming from high conservation value forest, from intact forest or endangered forest. And these companies have, for the most, simply not responded to that call for action. They've not looked at their supply chain and haven't taken any commitments and, you know, for the most, are not even willing to discuss with Greenpeace.
Those are in the failing our forest category: Best Buy, Harlequin, Home Depot, Sears, and Toys R Us. These are big customers of forest products. What kind of forest products are these companies using, and what scale are we talking about?
So we're looking at large, you know, large companies that are buying very large volumes, either of wood or of paper. If we think about Best Buy, Sears, and Toys R Us, for example, these companies, they use a lot of paper for their circulars, for their flyers. So, you know, they print a lot of their publicity on paper and, you know, they send it, you know, to millions of homes. And this has a lot of, you know, this has a major footprint on our forest. So what we're asking them to do is to look at ways to have a lower footprint on the forest, to look at recycled fiber, for instance, to look at FSC-certified fiber, for instance. So these are the kind of products that these companies are using. Other companies like Lowe's, for example, Rona, Home Depot, they mostly buy solid wood, lumber, to be able to make construction wood, all kinds of lumber. So these are companies that are in the solid wood category. So a lot of the companies that we've chosen are very, in different kinds of sectors, whether they're retailers, whether they're publishers, they all have a footprint and environmental footprint, and they all can find ways to reduce their footprint on the borough.
You mentioned, the criteria and the standards of the FSC. Can you tell us something about the FSC, because you repeated it a few times, but just for our listeners so that they can know, what does FSC stand for?
Sure. The FSC is the Forest Stewardship Council. It's one of many certification bodies that certify the way that the forest is being managed. But FSC is really the most rigorous one. It's the only one that's rigorous enough that it has the support of environmental groups, and it's being recognized all over the world. So FSC stands for Forest Stewardship Council, and really it is the most rigorous forest certification body that exists.
Okay, and so for our last question for the show, tell us about the situation of the boreal forest in Quebec, and if you can, in Ontario as well. What is happening with the boreal forest? Because here in the city, in Toronto, we get the impression that all of the north is just forest. So what's the problem?
Sure. Well, it's pretty much the same in Quebec and Ontario. The rate of cuts, so the large logging companies are cutting down our forest at a very rapid rate, and it creates a lot of problems, because there's species like the woodland caribou that are endangered species that live in this forest, and its habitat, for example, old growth forest, intact forest, that's its habitat, and its habitat is not being protected. So that's one of the, that's one of the problems. We're, for many years, we've been asking the governments of Quebec, the governments of Ontario as well, to increase the level of protection. So to create large protected areas, to be able to maintain biodiversity, to be able to maintain the health of the species that live in the boreal, like the caribou. But governments are very slow to act. So have decided that we would, look at this issue and raise the consciousness of the public, of the logging companies, of the governments, but also of the large corporate customers that buy forest products that are coming from the habitat, for example, of woodland caribou.
I said this, that was the last question, but I have one more for you. This news came out this week. I'm wondering if the companies in your report have actually responded to Greenpeace.
Well, we've seen that Best Buy has tried to be in touch with Greenpeace. We're definitely going to, talk with them. This is one of the reasons why we're doing those kinds of reviews and ranking, is because we want those companies to respond. We want those companies, but not only to talk about those issues, we want those companies to act. So we'll follow up and see whether Best Buy is willing to take action.
Melissa, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right, Word Up. I just want to thank the co-host, Robin Nieto, for that segment, that interview. And Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m., we're going to be right back after we play this music track. We're going to be speaking with Amy Miller. We finally got the call connected, getting in on our G20 topic. But first, we're just going to throw it to a music track. It's the Universal Cry Out. Mad and Must, featuring Jorn at Kapang Productions. Word Up, words from Melbourne, Australia. This is the Universal Cry Out, and Word Up.
Your ever sapient and wise, sharpening our frames of minds like the blades of knives, and play with mics like the gods play with rain and ice, digging skimp and saving up for apparatus, the physicists, rap martyrs and paragraph masters on the inbox and two Elises, loop the sequence, keeping heads, not to move the speakers, back again with our pads and pens, crossing out your fashion trends, heads are in their caps and threads, acting like mannequins, I'm in the office like Ricky Gervais, holding pens like Picasso, world is brushed with a picture to paint, tap the pads with a drummer's feel, and left all tongues with no time to heal, now we're back with another meal, create epiphanies, and over time write rhymes like time writes the pages of history, escaping the industry, open minds wide, while shades of pleasure are playing, play a symphony.
The atom bomb can be found inside of my catalogue, my magnum opus and the place I get matter from, a vagabond searching for utopia in Avalon's, I'm omnipresent so it's hard to draw comparison, champions of tongue turn the complex to obvious, and close chums stole the wreath of poet laureates, knowledge then wisdom reach age-old accomplishments, forged out of pain and happiness before apocalypse, birth, life, death, mum, dad, son, daughter, sun, moon, stars, earth, wind, fire, water, you're the sum of all elements, the mortal of Olympus, whose poetry was elegant, thoughtful and limpid, a guest of the gods at the dinner of the infinite, a place for the lyricist, an angelic instrument, eternity is nigh, the planets realign, lift the weight of the world that we hold in our minds.
Yes, me lion, bless me lion.
Matter and
most,
Matter and
most. Hey, I'm a Johnny. We are come again.
Yes, so we come again.
Yes, yeah.
So we come again.
Hey, life is a circle. Yeah, it's a universal, universal cry out, a global prosper. Time to sing the same song. Let's be.
On CKLN 88.1, joining us on the phone line is a return guest that we've heard her voice a few weeks ago, I should say, on our show. I think it was December 1st we had her on, and she's a journalist with the Dominion Media Co-op across Canada, and she's also the director of the award-winning documentary Miss for Profit. I'd like to welcome back on the show Amy Miller. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. And actually, last time we had you on Wednesday, December the 1st, and our phone call got cut off right as you were describing being detained. You were stopped somewhere on Bloor Street as you were headed to a demonstration during the G20 summit in June 2010. I guess, could you just go from where we left off here? Where like, what happened? How were you detained?
Sure. I mean, I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar. My case has been fairly publicized from a video that was published on YouTube the morning I had been released from the detention center. Essentially what happened is I was with two colleagues of mine from the Alternative Media Center, and we were going towards the detention center, the film studio that had been turned into essentially a holding cage for what amounted to over 1,000 people who were detained during the G20. And we were heading there because there had been a solidarity protest that was organized in reaction to the hundreds of arrests. While I was biking over with my two colleagues around 11:30 in the morning on that Sunday afternoon, we saw about a dozen young people being detained, and we saw that the police were patting them down and doing searches on them and going through their bags right on the street. And obviously, I found that very interesting. And we decided to stop and started filming the police detaining these young people and searching them and going through their bags. Well, it only took a few minutes before my colleagues and I were what I amount to as being attacked and were then also detained. My colleague Adam, he was throttled and he has a pacemaker, and he was tasered repeatedly and has had serious health problems since then. Well, I was throttled by the neck, taken down, and while I was being detained, there was different police that had held me and that came by and made comments towards me, and there was two police officers that were making comments about how when they were done with me, I would never want to work as a journalist again, and that they knew how the Montreal girls ruled and that they were looking forward to having their time with me and gangbanging me. And so that was my experience. I was then transferred to the detention center with about six other women and six other men in the paddy wagon that I was in. And I was then held for approximately 12 hours in the detention center. And then I was released around 1 in the morning. And it was the next morning that I went public at a press conference that the Alternative Media Center had organized. And yeah, and then from there was a few of us from the Alternative Media Center who all make our living as journalists and freelancers, who we decided to take collective action against the police and their behavior towards journalists. And we've launched a suit which as the pre-press for. But since then, we've grown. There's other journalists that have gone on board who also experienced violence.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to be going on, because this is shocking that this happened at this event. How unprecedented is this, that journalists are being attacked or detained and, you know, arrested? You know, were you expecting this? What were you thinking during the G20? Like, you know, how surprising was this, the treatment of journalists?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's really surprising that they reacted quite heavily, whether it be through verbal threats of violence and physical attacks on media. I just think it's a bit of an anomaly because it's here in Canada, and we haven't experienced many widespread, demonstrations of hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets. So the occasion doesn't happen very often here in Canada. But it's not something that I find really surprising, because we knew that there was thousands upon thousands of police that were going to be on the streets. And we knew that people were resisting the austerity measures of the G8, and that wasn't something that the Canadian government wanted to have happen. What I do think it's important is that, you know, your listeners, you know, question what is the role of journalists and media. What I think is interesting is how few media outlets were critical of the behavior of the state until it took a few days afterwards. At first, so much of the corporate media were just towing the state line and mocking and degrading independent journalists who had experienced violence and trying to be very dismissive. And so I think that's more interesting in terms of how was it presented and perceived by the corporate media. Mm-hmm. The minute you start to go into places and areas that the state doesn't want to have documented and witnessed, then the threat of violence is very real.
This truth is coming out about the G20, because last week we actually played the audio from this Ontario Ombudsman's speech about the Caught in the Act report that was released last week as Ontario's watchdog report on the G20 secret law and the Public Works Protection Act. And it talks about a bunch of, you know, it goes through a lot of different evidence and different people's stories. And, you know, it's really, the Ontario Ombudsman really made it clear that, you know, we were under martial law for one weekend. And you know, your statements were controversial, and they made a lot of headlines in the media because of what you were saying, your experiences inside that detention facility, and, you know, involving, you know, like sexual, you know, inappropriate touching and searches, you know, strip searches.
Well, I guess I just want to make a couple of quick points just to clarify. The threats made by the police towards me, the threats of sexual violence, gang rape, and what they plan to do on me, that was actually done before I got to the detention center. That was on the streets on Bay and Bloor when I had initially been detained. So that happened before I actually was in the detention center. And I just want to make that clarification because a lot of media have merged that together and misled the facts. So it was actually while I was on the streets. But in terms of that, I think it's really important that people reflect and critically think about the fact that this is a very systematic tool that is used by whether it be paramilitary or military or police forces all around the world during times of war, right? Rape is a weapon. The threat of rape is a weapon that is used to instill fear and break down people. One fact that I always find interesting that I've been speaking out about is that when I had to take the photo with the police, with the arresting officer, they had a whiteboard, and this is again still on the street when I was about to go into the paddy wagon. So just before that, I'm on Bay and Bloor, I'm taking the photo, and they had put down my ages, 1990, right? Whereas my date of birth is 1980.
Right.
So they had assumed, by just quickly glancing at my ID, that I was a young 19-year-old at the time, right? Almost 20, rather than a 29-year-old woman. And I think that says a lot about the psychology and mentality of the police officers at the time, where they were purposely trying to instill fear in young women. And as the weeks went by, after the violence of the G8 and the G20, more women were coming out and speaking out about the violence they had received. This, it started, we could definitely start to see a pattern that, you know, there was an assumption and an attempt to make sure that young women who were, whether they were engaging in demonstration and protesting, or whether they were journalists who were covering the protests and the demonstration, that they would second guess their agency in being able to participate in this again. And I think that's a very important thing for your listeners to think about, because for a 19-year-old, 20-year-old to receive this type of threat can be incredibly psychologically damaging. I mean, as a 29-year-old woman who received that, it was something that had a very deep impact on me. But you know, there's a much more maturity and experience that comes rather than a 19-year-old. So to go back to your question around martial law and the behavior of the police and the state during those days and what it amounts to, well, I mean, I do think that during the G20 and the G8, we were experiencing what amounts to martial law, and there was tactics that were used in times of war, you know, and not just on a theoretical level, but very much in practice.
Right. And the one of the ways you can get more information on this is to check Toronto Media Co-op. There's been a lot of information and a lot of stories out on the Toronto Media Co-op, toronto.mediacoop.ca. And the Toronto Media Co-op was one of the organizers or helping out with the Alternative Media Center, which a lot of the independent journalists were working out of at the G20, you know, publishing the Spoke, the newspaper of the anti-G8 G20 convergence, and getting the word out online. What did you think about the Toronto Media Co-op and everything?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it's really important to say that I believe that all media is biased, and there's no such thing as neutrality or objectivity when it comes to dissemination of information. The filters of the individual that will be presenting the facts, how they choose to present them, which order they present the information, and who is highlighted or focused on in terms of giving the information is all what creates bias. And this notion of objectivity of the media is a bit of a farce. I think some you know, listeners just much more upfront about it. That doesn't mean that to be aware of your bias doesn't mean that you're not professional, because if you're presenting facts, well, those are facts. It's just how information is disseminated. So in terms of the Alternative Media Center, I mean, it's grassroots coverage from below. So it's sure that the Alternative Media Center put a focus to highlight voices that are marginalized and overlooked by the corporate media. So there was a very strong incentive and desire to make sure there was representation of people who were organizers, who were taking to the streets, who have grievances that they're trying to pick for, that for by and large the corporate media will never represent or discuss. And so I think it was great that the Alternative Media Center existed, that there was such a blossoming of media that flourished and that was made. You know, we were receiving hundreds of thousands of hits on our website. You know, we were doing daily podcasts, we were doing daily print editions and daily videos, and those were seen by many because there was a strong desire by people to have information brought to them that was giving a view to what the corporate media was presenting.
Right. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is your award-winning documentary, Miss for Profit, Canada's Role in the Industries of War and Peace. Because this is definitely, you know, you're getting information out here through the form of a documentary that, you know, that is not really the one of the main focuses of the media, you know, your take on the war. I guess, how did you start making this documentary? Why did you make it, and, you know, how can people see it?
The idea behind Miss for Profit was that we don't have many tools to disseminate information about Canada's military-industrial complex. There's very few, whether it be documentaries or books on the subject, and I think it's something that the peace movement in Canada was sorely needing and lacking. And as someone committed to the peace movement over many years, I felt it was important to be able to bring something forward that would be useful across the country. So my background isn't as a filmmaker, it's as an organizer and in journalism. So I ended up falling in love with making documentaries, and I think it's such a strong medium to disseminate information. I think the film came out just a year and a half ago, and it's been very well received. It's been screened throughout the country, and if people are interested, they can check out the trailer on my website, and there's information on how they can view it from there. My website is wideopenexposure.com, and again, they can just type in MITS for Profit in the search words in Google.
Okay, great. And one thing I just wanted to ask you about, because we did mention the Toronto Media Co-ops, and I know you've been doing a lot of work with the Dominion and everything going on, you know, across Canada. And I think you're based in Montreal. Is there a media co-op starting up in Montreal? I think I had heard.
The media co-op, for your listeners who aren't familiar with it, it's a network of media co-ops across the country that are focused in different communities. So there's one in Vancouver, one in Toronto, one in Halifax, and there's a beta version of one in Montreal that's getting started, and there's a lot of plans that are being put in place to have one developed in Ottawa, as well as potentially in Kitchener-Waterloo. So it's a really exciting network that's flourishing, and it's an open source platform where anyone could write articles and publish, and then there's a local editorial committee that people are encouraged to get involved in, and from that they make decisions on which stories get featured and what have you. But it's really an on-the-ground, grassroots perspective of media that's happening in those local regions.
All right, yeah, thanks a lot, Amy Miller.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
And that's Amy Miller there from the Dominion Media Co-ops, calling in from Montreal, the Free Press 4. Look out for the Free Press 4. And for more updates, check out the toronto.mediacoop.ca, or you just go to mediacoop.ca if you want to see what's going on all across Canada. And also check out the documentary Miss for Profit, Canada's Role in the Industries of War and Peace, Miss for Profit, the documentary by Amy Miller. And this is the Word of Mouth Wednesday, just headed into a musical track here, and we'll be right back on Word of Mouth.
Peace. This is Chris Parker, and one of the most important things you have is a future. Future.
in. Use the right perception. Hip hop was designed to balance your soul and direction. A natural selection only few can understand. Can you use perception to see mics inside my hands? To you this is a mic, but to me this is a plan. To become the light and let my consciousness expand. I offer you a chance to think metaphysical. Close your mouth and tell yourself hip hop is a miracle. Now ask yourself a question, why do I exist? How did I hear my voice without using my lips? It's called your inner ship, a consciousness of spirit. Shut your mouth and say hip hop, I guarantee you'll hear it. This is what you use to travel throughout time. This is what you use to create freestyles in your mind. It's not open info that was written by computer. This was written by a teacher, it's the power of future.
Your mouth did not say it, yet you said it. You spoke without your mouth. In fact, you heard yourself say,
hip-hop is a miracle.
Yet, your ear never heard you say this phrase.
Your older self protects you while the younger self respects you. This is not a wire, it's a virus that infects you. My lyrics are not just words sitting on a page. They're a spiritual version of me here upon the stage. Appearing in the space, it's Caddy Caddy One. I'm physically so big, I'll light my joints inside the sun. I'll never carry guns, my elder told me not to. Cause if I kill someone, then that means I could kill hip hop too. I sit heavy in my thought, meditation to focus on hip-hop. Cause it'll never stop, there's way too much inertia. If God created hip-hop, then the culture I will worship. The environment is perfect, cause we stand for peace. Growing like a flower in the belly of the beast. The environment is perfect, cause we stand for peace. Growing like a flower in the belly of the beast. Beast.
What you must begin to understand is that the real you exists outside of physical space and time. With your mind, you can be here now, or in your past, or in your future, instantly. In other words, your essence is not your body and its senses.
I hold you in my palm like the heart of a computer. Your little spaceship will fall apart up in the future. Slowly penetrating like the start of an intruder. Never hesitating, I stay sharp like a shooter. Hustle like a looter or a cougar in the jungle. Standing on the planet as the earth begins to crumble. Sitting in the universe, there's thoughts of a solution. Start a revolution, stop the pollution. Why you keep shooting? You're blocking evolution. You're blind from the fact and you're caught up in confusion. I'm talking to humans, I'm talking to you, man. Listen to the meaning, stop the illusion. Locked in a fusion, trapped in a lie. Become a super hip-hopper that will never die. Open up your mind, I say a thousand times. Open up your mind so your third eye always shines. Where you gonna be in 2013 when there's no jobs left and you're still searching? What you gonna do when it's 2022 and I'm still wrapping up both you and your crew, your grandchildren too, and all of the above? Cause I remain true to the culture that I love. Your grandchildren too, and all of the above. Cause I remain true to the culture that I love.
Realize rather quickly that the 20-year-old you has depended upon the 10-year-old you for its very survival. And the 30-year-old you is depending upon the 20-year-old you for its very survival. Your essence has its own senses that must be discovered and strengthened, just as your physical senses are discovered and strengthened as you mature in life.
KRS-One, Knowledge Reigns Supreme over nearly everyone. That was a beat by Disciple of Righteous Knowledge. The track was called Power of the Future, and it was off the Universal Language mixtape, which is by Caddy One. Caddy One Presents and Peter the Believer MC on that track. So shout-outs to the Temple of Hip-Hop. And just moving on in the show, we're going to get into the topic of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And I actually went to the premiere screening of the movie, the new movie about Mumia Abu-Jamal, Justice on Trial, The Case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, which was screening at the University of Toronto. Some of the main sponsors include the 1917 Society of U of T, CHRY, CKLN, Common Cause, International Bolshevik Tendency, Socialist Action, and much respect to everyone that made it out to the film screening. I suggest you check out the Justice on Trial, The Case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, if you ever get a chance to check it out, by Big Noise Film, 65 minutes long, lots of information in it. And I was thinking, you know, it'd be a good time to play a commentary by the man himself, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Here's one of Mumia Abu-Jamal's latest commentaries. It's called Clinton with a Tan, off prisonradio.org.
Obama, Clinton with a Tan. As rumblings of discontent arose in the wake of the extension of the Bush-era tax cuts by the Obama administration, President Barack Obama pulled out his secret weapon, former President William Jefferson Clinton. Clinton before a bank of microphones is always a sight to behold, for few politicians have his mix of pure intelligence, down-home folksy charm, and sheer performance skills. It is a measure of our politics that the system elected a man who was virtually a clone of Clinton, born to poor and working-class people, educated in Ivy League schools, advocates of globalism and neoliberalism, and servants of the business class. When we recollect the acrimony and bad blood that flowed between the two camps during the campaign and the post-election integration and indeed immersion of Clintonites into all levels of the Obama administration, why should we be surprised when the president runs into a bad squall and he calls out Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton, perhaps the most talented politician of his generation, was also the head salesman of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, the pact that dealt a body blow to the very same working class that would be implored to vote for Hillary Clinton back in 2008. We have forgotten the almost comic H. Ross Perot, the independent who opposed Clinton and Bush during the 1992 and 96 elections, based primarily on his anti-NAFTA stance. Perot warned, in so many words, "If you pass that NAFTA, all you'll hear is a giant sucking sound of jobs and manufacturers gone to Mexico." People laughed at his Texas twang, his big ears, and his lack of height, while Bush and Clinton poo-pooed his warnings as silly. We live now amidst the post-NAFTA carnage that has brought mass disaster to both countries. Only the rich and super-rich benefited from NAFTA, as workers in the USA adapted to the new and grim economic realities, and workers in Mexico either joined the drug industry or fled up north to the U.S. to find work in the fields of agriculture or carpentry. It is therefore fitting that Obama would call on Clinton, for the man who could sell ice to the Inuits or sand to the Saudis can surely sell this perverse notion of tax cuts to billionaires. From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Word up, word of mouth. That was Mumia Abu-Jamal, the commentator, live from death row. Mumia Abu-Jamal. Check out the documentary Justice on Trial. And also, what I'm going to play here is a clip that features many speakers that were part of a United Front rally action protest near the U.S. consulate in Toronto that took place on November the 9th, 2010. And this clip features some of the people that came to support the campaign to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And you're going to hear a lot of different voices on this clip of people that support the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal campaign, people that were at the rally, the United Front in the, near the U.S. consulate. So without any further ado, here is some of the voices, some of the words, some of what you missed if you missed the event. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, Word of Mouth Wednesday, independent news media coverage of the event, United Front Rally. Word up.
Welcome to the demonstration. This is a decisive day for Mumia. He's fighting for his freedom. He's been in jail for so many years. He should be freed. So long in prison for a crime he didn't commit.
Jerry, give me that microphone.
Okay.
We're going to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Brick by brick.
We got to
wall by wall. We're going to free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
We're just spreading the word out here to let people know what's going on and bringing some light to the situation.
And who are you?
Spec One.
Yeah. Weird. And Spec One, I know you're doing some making some moves in the hip-hop, local hip-hop world and worldwide. How do you think the hip-hop community is going with this issue, the Mumia Abu-Jamal issue?
There are probably a few people in the hip-hop industry that know about the situation or acknowledge it, but I don't really hear too many people in the hip-hop industry talking about the situation. You know? I don't think hip-hop is fully behind this right now. You know?
Mumia must go free!
Abolish the racist death penalty!
Mumia! Mumia must go free.
Yeah, this is Shine from South Africa.
We're attacking here on the streets here. We got a lot of people here at this rally here. What do you think about the movement here?
I think what's happening in Toronto is happening in a lot of different places, you know what I mean? The progressive movement is still trying to find its feet. You know, there's been a lot of setbacks, a lot of small victories as well. I think the aim is just to keep going. You know, but what's happening in Toronto is happening in different places all over the world. So it is necessary to have these voices. It doesn't matter how marginal it is, doesn't matter how many people, how little people show up, you know, but to keep the good fight going. You
know? Mumia, Mumia must be free. Abolish the racist death penalty.
The Mumia Abu-Jamal rally. We're right near the U.S. consulate. We're here with a guest here, Wasun. What's the word here?
All right, I'm here to support Mumia. When I was 15 years old, this is the first struggle that I got involved with. The Mumia campaign in the mid-90s, 94, 95, was organized by a number of different Trotskyist groups on the left. And that was my first experiences with mass protests. And as I got older, studying the Black Panther history and the Black Panther Party, which influenced me, I got to learn about how important and central Mumia was within the party and after the party, organizing with Move and the John Africa movement. Mumia is a legacy in himself, and this is a critical time where he might possibly be executed. He needs all the support he can get internationally. And you know, I'm just here to represent. This is my roots, and this is my foundation.
What's on? Word up. Tune in to Hood to Hood, CKLN, 88.1 FM.
Free Mumia.
Break by break, game wall by wall. We're going to free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
We still got to have hope that we can make a difference by making noise and raising the awareness to the issue and letting people know what's happening, you know?
And where can people find, if they're looking for your music, where can they find it?
Anywhere. Just Google the name Spec One. Peace.
We sent a notice out to almost 100 media outlets in and around Toronto. And guess what we have here in attendance tonight?
Nothing.
Zero. It's a story they don't want to know about. It's a story they pretend doesn't exist. It's the truth that they don't want to look at. People know that today, the U.S. Federal Third Court is considering for the third time whether to immediately proceed with Mumia's execution or to hold a new sentencing trial. We're not going to know the results of that for some indeterminate period of time, a few weeks, a few months. We have all come together on the basis of the same three slogans: stop the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal, Abolish the racist death penalty. Free Mumia.
Free Mumia.
Now, of course, there's still lots of things we don't agree on, but that's okay, because this is what's called a united front. The idea is to unite as many people as possible in a common action for a particular objective.
Mumia! Mumia! Must be free! Abolish the racist death penalty!
Mumia! Mumia! Must go free! Abolish the racist death penalty!
The first speaker, who's probably known to most of you and certainly to everyone who's a CKLN listener, is Norman Otis Richmond. So, Norman?
First of all, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that we are standing on Turtle Island. I think that's very important. And secondly, I was out here in 1995 when we saved Mumia Abu-Jamal the first time. 1995, on August 17th, they were going to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal. August 17th happens to be the birthday of Marcus Mosiah Garvey. In 1992, I happened to win the Toronto Arts Award, and I dedicated my award to Mumia Abu-Jamal, Fidel Castro, and the Cuban Communist Party. I really felt good about that, saying that in front of the mayor of Toronto at the time, and so on and so forth. Mumia Abu-Jamal, of course, is an African. He's an anti-imperialist African, and I consider myself an anti-imperialist. As being an anti-imperialist, you support, of course, you support you support the liberation of your own people, but you also support all oppressed people. Not all God's children, I said, but all oppressed people. Because I don't think that I'm going to die and go to heaven or paradise and be up there with Bush and Barack Hussein Obama, who happens to be my brother, but he's still an imperialist. But he's part of the family. But I don't support Barack Hussein Obama at all. I don't support Eric Holder at all, the Attorney General. And I think that while we talk about Mumia Abu-Jamal, I think that Mumia Abu-Jamal would want me to mention Marilyn Buck, a white anti-imperialist woman who recently passed away, who supported the struggle of African people. I think Mumia Abu-Jamal would want me to mention Abdul Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H-Rap Brown. I think that Mumia Abu-Jamal would want me to mention the Cuban Five. I think Mumia Abu-Jamal would definitely want me to mention Leonard Peltier. And like I stand here, like I say, I'm for the liberation of all people, all oppressed people, like I said, and I want to thank you very much for tolerating me.
We got to free Mumia, we got to liberate Mumia, right? Mumia's been working for us behind enemy lines for years, for decades, and we got to do what we can on the outside to free him. That's all I'm going to say about that. But what I wanted to do is draw some generalizations and parallels between what's happening to Mumia and between what's happening to people all across the world, including right here in Canada. Right. If you know just a little bit about Mumia's case and how he got himself into jail, you'll know that his case is part of a much broader tendency of the repression of racialized, working-class, revolutionary people in the United States, of which COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, was one program of many in a very broad, centuries-long, but increasingly scientifically refined counterinsurgency program directed at the leadership of the working class, at revolutionaries like the Black Panther Party, of which the Black Panther Party is probably the most significant organization in this continent's history, fighting for the liberation of all oppressed people in North America. Right? And you'll know, if you studied a little bit about the Black Panther Party, you'll know that the program that was attacked, that was executed against them and attacking their leadership and attacking their, you know, even the rank and file as well, was part of a much broader counterinsurgency exercise that is trying to prevent the working class, proletarian people, and progressive people from coming together and getting something done, changing the system, right? So if you know a little bit about that, you should be able to draw the parallels to what's happening here in Canada, what continues to happen here in Canada, right? We haven't had any threat of insurrection or any, you know, revolutionary uprisings in Canada quite for quite some time, right? But that doesn't mean that operation is not still in play. I'd like to just draw your attention for a second to a documentary that was screened on CBC's Fifth Estate a couple weeks ago. I don't know if anybody saw that, right? Enemies of the People. Did you see that? Right? For 30, 40 years, this country had a counterinsurgency program where they had a file this thick, and I'm sure there's some maybe brothers and sisters here that go back to the 60s and 70s who were probably on that list, probably still on some other list today. And this is where they had files, really thick files, of at least 16,000 people that they were looking to indefinitely detain in the event of some national emergency, right? This counterinsurgency operation is always at play. And today, at a time when maybe the resistance isn't really strong, it takes a form of an informational warfare, right? And the arrest that happened with the G20 is part of that, right? That there's not a major threat right now. We got a lot of work to do, as this brother said, here with the United Front to get ourselves organized. We got a lot of work to do. But right now, a big part of the work that we need to do is go to the people, like the Black Panther Party did, like Mumia Abu-Jamal has been doing for 30 years as a revolutionary journalist. We have to go to the people. We got to serve the people. We got to tell the people what's up. We got to learn from the people as well, because we got a lot to learn ourselves, right? We're not necessarily connected to all the struggles of the working class. We have a lot of work to do ourselves. And speaking on behalf of and for Basics Community News Service, I encourage a lot of people to get involved in that as well. We're trying to go to the people, serve the working class, do like the Black Panther Party used to do in their community news service and serving the people. Free Mumia.
Next speaker is Riley from the International Bolshevik Tendency. Yes.
Free Mumia. As other speakers have noted, it's no accident that Mumia is on death row. As a former Black Panther, a MOVE supporter, and a pro-working class militant who has dedicated his life to the struggle for liberation from all forms of oppression, Mumia is considered a dangerous person by the ruling class. As the voice of the voiceless, Mumia fearlessly exposed the corruption and barbarity of the Philadelphia Police Department. And for that, he was framed up for murder.
An example of this is that in 2001, there was a court stenographer whose name was Terry Maurer Carter. She revealed that during the original trial in 1982, Albert Sable, the judge who was supposed to be presiding over it, said in his chambers, when he thought nobody was listening to somebody he thought he could trust and was overheard by her, that he was going to help the prosecution fry Mumia, except he referred to Mumia by the N-word. This is before the evidence was even presented. That's the judge who was hearing the case. Now, of course, the stenographer needed a job. She had a family to feed, a mortgage to pay. She didn't say anything about it. 19 years later, she came forward. And instead of being admissible, it was determined that it was inadmissible. She could not, her evidence could not be presented. Why? Well, because the deadline had passed. And in the meantime, they'd passed a law signed by Bill Clinton, anti-terrorist and effective death penalty law, which set all kinds of new stipulations and made it extremely difficult. So when new evidence comes forward, and a lot of new evidence has come forward in Mumia's case of his innocence, he's been told that it cannot be heard because it missed the deadline.
No!
Wall by wall. We gotta free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Wall by wall.
We gotta free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. So you heard in that clip a bit of the United Front rally, a few of the speakers speaking near the U.S. consulate in Toronto. That took place on November the 9th, 2010. It was a major action campaign in the support of the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal worldwide movement. And in that clip, you heard some of the voices, Barry Weisletter, Socialist Action, Spec One, Shaheen of the Playing Fields Connective, Wasun of Hood to Hood, which is on CKLN Saturday Morning Live. The host, Norman Otis Richmond of CKLN 88.1 FM, Basics Community News Service, the International Bolshevik Tendency, NDP Socialist Caucus, Communist Party of Canada, Partisan Defense Committee, Community Justice Committee, Angola 3 Support Committee, Black Action Defense Committee, Fight Back, Ginger Project, OPRG of the UFT, Socialist Alternative, Toronto Young New Democrats, Common Cause, Community Solidarity Network, the Kitchener-Waterloo Spot Collective, APUS at UFT, and the Canadian Auto Workers, and more. For the radio essays of Mumia Abu-Jamal, check out prisonradio.org, and you can listen to those. And for independent media news coverage, make sure you keep on listening to CKLN 88.1 FM, shows like Saturday Morning Live, for your updates on what's going on with the case, the trial of Mumia Abu-Jamal. As well, you can check out the Toronto Media Co-op, and I'd like to thank Amy Miller again for speaking with us a bit on the G20 issues and her work as a journalist, Amy Miller, and the filmmaker behind the documentary Myths for Profit. And I'd also like to thank Robin Nieto, co-host on the show, and all the good volunteers and supporters of community radio, the people that made it out last week to the CRTC hearings, and the people that are trying to keep up with what's going on in the community radio, and much for respect to the listeners of Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're planning to be back next week. My name's Daniel Libby. This has been CKLN 88.1 FM, Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m. Stay tuned for the Blues Dr. Julie Hill with the Blue Remedy coming up right about now.